CAL FIRE.
I'm gonna hold this so you guys can hear me.
There you go.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Greg Roth. I am the unit chief for the CAL FIRE Assistant Unit and the General County Fire Warden. When this project started to move forward, the CAL FIRE Assistant Unit was tasked with engaging with the Klamath River Renewal Corporation and planning for fire mitigation efforts that we could implement with the loss of the lake and what would be the river. We started meeting with them and having those talks, and some of those mitigation efforts that were implemented are aerial access points on the river so that our firefighting aircraft have a spot to dip water out of. Both here in the Kopko Lake footprint and also the Iron Gate Lake footprint, as well as river access points in which we can get our equipment down to the river and draft water out of it to our engines and firefighting equipment. There was a spot, both the Oregon side and California side have wildfire alert cameras or cameras in which we can see wildfires on, and the Oregon side actually has a detection program in which you pick up new starts and send equipment to. And there was a hole identified here in Siskiyou on the Klamath River corridor, and so a wildfire alert camera was placed on Paradise Craggy, kind of outside of Wairika near McDowell, where we could look both upriver and downriver in that area. Some of the wildfire alert cameras that OEF has on their side already look into the Kopko area, so that wasn't needed for coverage. I know that it was brought up about the donations to the Siskiyou County Chiefs Association. And there was a donation of equipment to the Siskiyou County Chiefs Association, and the Chiefs Association worked with the other county chiefs in allocating that equipment. And I'll go over that with you, what was allocated. So this was a donation from the Klamath River Renewal Corporation to the Chiefs Association. It was 8 aluminum-framed, 3,000-gallon tanks, which we can take out and set up where they're needed for either drafting out of or being able to like chain water tenders to, so that we have some sort of water source at a location. And those were placed at the Kopko Fire Department, the Hornbrook Fire Department, the Montague Fire Department, the Klamath River Fire Department, South Wairika, the CAL FIRE Wairika headquarters, the Happy Camp Fire Department, and McDowell CAL FIRE to cover the backside of the area here. One dump trailer for chips for fuel reduction, a flatbed truck to haul that trailer as well as other trailers, two 3,600-gallon water tenders that were placed at the Montague Fire Department and the South Wairika Fire Department. And the reason that the Chiefs Association decided to place them there was because of staffing, adequate staffing and adequate drivers to be able to respond those. There was 4 copter dip tanks that were purchased, and are currently 3 of them are at the county yard, and one of them is at the Siskiyou County Airport. There were 4 fire pumps, 4 gated Y valves, and 20 50-foot lengths of 2.5-inch fire hose that was placed in a trailer that is housed at the Wairika headquarters, CAL FIRE headquarters, so that it can be driven to wherever it's needed. There is a 15-inch drum tripper on order, and most recently, The Chiefs Association was able to get three 2,500-gallon water tanks, water holding tanks, to be placed at the Copco Patricia Station for fire use, as well as a pump to pump the water from those tanks into fire equipment. So that's an update of how CAL FIRE's been working with the Klamath River Renewal Corporation. CAL FIRE has also been working with our cooperators. We have what's called a rescue group in Siskiyou County, and it's made up of CAL FIRE personnel, the Holmbrook Fire Department, COPCO, and surrounding fire departments, and it's a group that has highly trained people in both water rescue and rope rescue, and those are the people that you may have seen out here yesterday training in the mud. And they're collaborating and training for if somebody was to get stuck out there and if they had to do affect one of those rescues. So as Supervisor Halp talked about, we are working on those backup plans of what's plan B if something happens, how do we get to people. So the other thing that we've done is that CAL FIRE has, over the past 3 years, had a explosive use helicopter here in Siskiyou County. And that's a Type 1 helicopter. It's a big Black Hawk. You may have seen it. It has a bucket underneath of it that drops water on fires. And we plan on hosting that helicopter here again. One of those tanks that I talked about earlier is placed out at the airport, and we've been filling that with water to ensure when that helicopter lifts off, we can go and get a bucket immediately and take it to the fire with us, especially on this side of the freeway. So in most times, the helicopter comes over a fire and has to find a water source, dip out of it, and then go to the fire. This allows that helicopter to bring it with us, immediately get water on the fire, and then find that location. We're also, I heard about fuel breaks. It's definitely on our radar, and I can tell you from the unit's perspective, we'll definitely work with Fish and Game as well as the local community, because you guys have a lot of fire knowledge here. You've had fires before in your backyard, I know, because I was here. And so, as well as our fire safe councils on the needs for fuel reduction around your community, where those fuel breaks make sense, where shaded fuel breaks closer to your communities make sense, and also access and egress is going to be important for our fire equipment trying to get in, as well as you guys trying to evacuate. So CAL FIRE, just to reiterate, CAL FIRE's goal is to stress all unwanted fires at 10 acres or less. That hasn't changed. We do that through an aggressive initial attack, which we're going to continue to do. And CAL FIRE Siskiyou Unit, and in cooperation with Siskiyou County, will continue to serve and safeguard the people of Siskiyou County and protect the property and resources of California.
Thank you. Anything from the board? Supervisor Howell?
Just a quick question, Greg, thank you. When do you anticipate being able to update the PIP coordinates for the helicopters for emergency response in the county along the newly exposed river?
I don't have a time frame. As you know, I've just taken this position, and I definitely plan to engage. In fact, I was just talking to Susie Brady, my PIO, about reaching out to the KRC about figuring out where those locations are being, when they're going to be implemented, as well as those access points.
Supervisor Oberman, anything? Supervisor Chris?
Just one question. Chief Gill, would you mind coming up?
Sure.
I'm not inquisiting you or anything like that.
I know.
You're my boss, actually. So, Mr. Gill, could you explain for our state and KRC partners, the partners working on this, that with the fire hydrants that do exist in the community and the deficiencies there are with them?
Sure. So only this part of the community, about Ager Beswick, about straight across, down into this part of the community and down to the end of the paved area of Kopka Road has fire hydrants. And they're supplied from the Mutual Water Company, which is a spring-fed source, so not directly impacted by drawdown. The rest of the lake, like all of Patricia and the rest of Ager Beswick, there are no hydrant systems. So we had key drafting locations that we could access the lake from. Mallard Cove launch ramp was one of them. The store dock is another one, and then there's a few accesses, like easements between people's houses here and there. They used to go down right to the lake shore that we could get a water tender down and draft from. And we have lost all of those locations as far as draftability. So, and as far as the tanks that we're getting, I guess, from the Chief Association or from CAL FIRE, I don't know when that's scheduled to be installed. I know I haven't had any communication in a month or two with anybody about it, but I know that it's still in the works. But if we get that, we'll have about 6,000 gallons of storage on Patricia that will need to be replenished by water tenders. But other than that, we don't have any other hydrant systems or water access.
That's true. The current hydrants you have, isn't it? If the neighboring department shuts it off too fast, it starts to bust pipes.
It's an aging system. It was built a long time ago, probably in the 60s. And if you do shut the hydrants off too quickly, you get a ratcheting effect, and it'll break the main line. So that will not only drain the 80,000 gallons of water storage that we have, but it'll shut down, not only shut down firefighting access to water, but it will shut down all the houses on the water system as well.
Excuse me.
So yeah, access has definitely been further limited to water sources for refilling water tenders.
Thank you, Mr. Gill.
Mm-hmm. I want to follow up.
Sure, go ahead.
So years ago, Chief, I asked KRC to look from a mitigation standpoint at installing dry hydrants.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know where that went, or if that was just discarded, or what?
Well, so the two proposed sites for dry hydrants here on the lake, one was at Deer Creek, which is at the intersection of Patricia and Ager Beswick, and the other one was at Beaver Creek, which is halfway around the lake. Logistically, both of those access points, whether it was not enough water to supply the hydrant or not enough turnaround space to get a truck in there and turn around, those issues were raised to KRC, and at that time the decision was made not to put any dry hydrants in this area because there really isn't a viable water source, a sufficient water source to supply those hydrants. You can see an example of one at Jenny Creek, and Jenny Creek has a lot more water than Deer Creek or Beaver. So no, we don't have any additional resources.
Thank you. All right. I have one more public comment on this item. Holly Hanser. 3 minutes. How are you doing over there, Wendy and Dennis?
Okay. Yes, Holly Hanser. I remember the fires here in 2014. I went right up to our backyard, my dad's backyard. So grateful to CAL FIRE and Kopka Lake, because of the quickness of the firefighting capability and ability with our body of water here. The McKinney fire I saw over our property in Wairika, helicopter after helicopter bringing water from presumably Kopka Lake to fight the McKinney fire. And couple of months after the 2014 fire that went left, miraculously didn't burn our community down, but it was definitely at our doorstep. I forget the name of that fire. But what was it called?
Oregon Gulch
Fire. The Bowles Fire came, and within an hour, burned my house to the ground, and burned 150 structures, whatever the number is, residences, and that was the beginning of the California wildfire disaster in the cities. I was one that, unfortunately, wasn't able to get insurance before the fire, didn't certainly have insurance after the fire. I didn't qualify for anything, and to this day, I haven't been able to rebuild. Within an hour, speed, as you know, in these fires is a factor, especially with our conditions when it's dry, and especially in the city of Weed or anywhere where there's wind. So all these little things, which are great, you know, getting it, we can get it faster. I would like to give you guys just verbal notice that you and whoever's doing this is endangering the community to have drained this lake. You're endangering our Siskiyou County survival for fire danger. I would like to give you written notice, but I haven't done that yet. But I'm giving you verbal notice as a formal entity, and whoever will listen to this too, the state of California, Governor Newsom, whatever his name is, and Governor Brown, that what this draining the dam and the destruction of the dam is a danger, fire hazard to our communities, not just at Copper Lake, but all across the North County. Thank goodness we still have Lake Siskiyou for South County, but from my personal experience and my personal hardship of losing my house and the miraculous job that they did in the Bowles Fire, there would have been a lot more damage had it not been our Cal Fire chief or whoever Darren Quigley's office was in the fast action after the Happy Camp Fire that same year. But fortunately, last year and this year, we've had water, rain, but there was like a 7-year drought, however long. And there's still dry conditions, and when we talk about, okay, we can do all these things with a body of water like Copper Lake that often, thank goodness we had it, thank goodness we can still have it by the grace of God, and please, let's everybody write their affidavits. And I'm giving you verbal notice, and we'll see if we can get some written notice, not to you personally, but just the whole thing. Thank you very much.
So just so that you are aware, Ms. Hansard, and the public, this board has little to do with this project altogether.
I understand.
We've been on the resident side of trying to protect our citizens to the best of our ability over the last 25 years and several million dollars that's come out of the general fund. So don't discount that, please.
Yes, we voted not to have it destroyed. Thank you very much.
Okay, with that, I'm going to move on to Public Works, the road commissioner. And Chrissy, I think I've got your phone up here.
Yes.
Somebody said, okay. All right. Good afternoon, sir. It's not evening yet.
Not yet. Good afternoon, board. Tom Deeney, Director of Public Works and Road Commissioner for Siskiyou County.
We have a presentation back there?
We do?
Okay.
So the presentation that's up on the screen here is very similar to the one that I showed at the last special board meeting, but we do have updated photographs. They were taken February 1st, 2004, so a couple weeks ago. The purpose of these photographs is to show the damage that's occurred to our roads during this project. There are several of them, and I will take my glasses off so I can talk you through what's going on in each one of them. But you can see in this photo where we had done some patchwork last year, most of that is gone and the road's starting to turn into dirt. Next slide, please. This is another telling one where you can see there was a small blowout last year on the right-hand edge, and the road is returning to native condition all along that edge, and most of this damage is from heavy haul related to dam removal activities. Next slide, please. Here's another very bad one where you can see there was just a little chip on the right-hand side of the road starting in last year. And now that entire shoulder is gone. It's eaten into the median and approaching the other side. Next slide, please. This one's harder to tell because the picture was taken in the shade, but it's the same idea where the road has now been ruined all the way across the driving surface. Next slide, please. Here you can see where the road was in poor condition. There's no disputing that, but now this entire section is beaten down into dirt. Next slide, please. This was the section where we took where there's just a little bit of minor damage, and the shoulder's just been eroded all the way out across the middle. Next slide, please. This is a section of road that was once again in rough shape when we started, but we have damage that goes from one shoulder all the way across to the other. Next slide, please. Same idea. You can see where we had done some early project patching on the 2023 slide on the right hand side, and you can see the shadow of that left, but the road around it has been eaten away. Next slide, please. Once again, same idea, right? We had a road that was in poor condition but minorly damaged, turning into a road that is in horrific condition and majorly damaged on the right hand side. Next slide, please. And here's another one where we had some damage and the road's just eaten away for a good 100 yards. Next slide, please. Another example, we had some left-hand damage, and that damage is blown up to encompass the entire roadway. Next slide, please. And same idea, this road was in bad shape. Actually, it was in one of the worst pieces before the project started, and the bad area has just gotten much larger. Next slide, please. Here we had some road damage, and in the slide to the right, there's no road. It's been beaten into native material all through that, pretty much that entire stretch. Next slide, please. I'm sure everybody up here knows, but this is a slide talking about the damage at what we were calling milepost 13 on Kopko Road, where the road fell into the lake. Next slide. You can see we had about a three or four foot gap in the roadway. It was broken off into two sections. Next slide, please. That's a drone picture of what had happened, and you can see where the water had been running out through the hillside. Next slide, please. That's a video. You can skip it. This is a picture of the repaired road on mile marker 13. The road surface is now even and flat, and Klamath KRRC did that repair after that catastrophic failure. And I believe that's the end of all my pictures. But there's a couple of things that I needed to stress before I open it up to questions. The county has not given up on these roads. In fact, I've had guys out there every month working. It's gotten to the point, the condition in these roadways, that I'm going to have to start doing major dig outs because I just cannot keep the road from what's called pumping when a heavy rig drives over it and tries to compress the water, and it just ruins the road. So we're gonna have to do dig outs. We're looking at tasking this district with 1 week a month going forward working out here. And that's gonna be a big expense, but that's what we're gonna have to do to keep the roadway open. That's also going to hurt other roads in the district, because if I dispatch a crew, one of my district crews, to just this road 1 week a month, that means they're not going anywhere else, right? That's going to be the job. The road's in terrible condition, but we haven't given up. We're doing what we can to keep it moving. And then my one other point before we open this up to questions, I know ARC is here and listening. I'd like you to apply pressure to your contractors to slow down on these sections of road. People are flying through there, right? And just remind them to be respectful of the community that they're in. This isn't their driveway, right? They have to share this road with everybody else. And that's all I have.
Thank you. I have a couple of public comments. Crystal Maxwell.
Crystal Maxwell from Popco Lake. As Erica had talked about earlier, the bus being ran off the road multiple times by big rigs, and yes, there are big rigs over here. They get lost a lot, and it's less now, but we had discussed this in another meeting about how many big rigs were getting stuck up here, and people were having to help them out. And just so happens, at that meeting, a big rig got stuck, and he was here all day, and his contractor said, oh, you figure it out, because he was a subcontractor. And the guy ended up having to stay at Danny and Francis's because he had nowhere to go. Also, the bus being ran off, my best friend is a bus driver, okay? And the children were so scared because the big rig ran them off into the ditch, and they started videoing and taking pictures of it. And it has been multiple occasions. Like I said earlier, it's common sense. You have to have flaggers. You have to have people directing traffic if you're gonna have that. There are no roads, you know, there's no road markers here. So, and then when you have a wide load, you're supposed to have flaggers anyway. That's the law. You have to. And also, roads, potholes, they are so bad. I just had to go buy another set of tires. I have had my tires 7 months, and the guy jokingly said, oh, what are you doing, hitting a bunch of curbs? And then I was like, no, our roads, because of all the big rigs and all the potholes. And he's like, yeah, that'll do it. Okay. And then he goes and tells me that I'm going to have to start getting alignments more frequently. And that's all coming out of my pocket. I'm disabled. I'm on Social Security. And 80% of my income went to buying new tires because they can't take care of the roads. Also, the sheriff had mentioned that they had not been called a lot of times, and I don't see him in here. They have been called many times, and they have done nothing. We had a situation here just last week, and they did nothing. We have called because, and we keep getting the same thing. We can't see it because you're so far away. I understand they can't see it because they're so far away. But when we call and they're here 7-8 hours later, they're obviously not going to see it. We are so far from town. We get that. But don't come saying that we're not doing something when we are doing it. And when they talked about the equipment, of us not getting equipment for the fire station, obviously, if we don't have the staffing to receive the equipment, obviously we need help. Danny and Francis cannot do everything. And when it takes 35 to 40 minutes for Hornbrook or Wairika to get up here to help, we're screwed. And one of the owners up here, he actually is pretty high up in the San Francisco Fire Department, and he was here at one of the last meetings, and he flat out told all the people that were here that they created a disaster because of one fire spark, and it's going to turn into an inferno and just go straight up that canyon.
I need you to wrap up, please.
That's it.
Thank you. Don Meamber. Good afternoon.
My name is Don Meamber. I'm Montague. My wife Sheila and I have a cattle ranch over by Montague. We live just north of town and have a small ranch down by the river. Hello?
Yeah, there you go.
We purchased the ranch from my grandmother, Mrs. Prather, and she's a sister of John Christie Boyle, who built all these dams. He and the power company crew built Copco 1 and 2, and then when they built Iron Gate and J.C. Boyle Dam, Morrison Knudsen, International Construction Company, built those two. Anyway, I just want to throw that out there, but what I want to talk about the roads. Over a year ago, I started noticing a big end up and belly dump trucks coming down Eager Road just north of Montague. I contacted my supervisor and I said, why are they coming down this way? Why can't they go down go to the freeway instead of wearing out the county road? I never heard back, so I don't know what you guys address that possibility, but I call one of my CHP friends and let them know when I see them. When they come down half mile from town, it's a 45 zone, and those trucks are going down before they hit the bridge. They look like they're going 75 to me. So you talk about them driving too fast up on the Cockrell Road. I think they're driving too fast there, too. And I talked to a friend last night, and he said he's seeing damage on the road from Montague on up to Clamathon Bridge, where I think they should be going on over the freeway. Of course, they'll be turning the rest of Cockrell Road to Hornbrook, but at least it'll save the rest of it. I just don't understand it. Is the state actually telling KLRC they can't go down the freeway because the loads are too heavy? I was hoping Tom can tell me.
Okay.
That's
thank
all
you.
I have.
Go ahead.
Oh, you got a question coming forward.
Yeah, if you want to
address that.
Yeah.
Do I have to say my name again?
No.
Okay.
We just us. We only have to say our name.
So as far as loads not being permitted down the interstate, that is not the case. The heavy equipment that's coming down the backside here, so the backside of the Good Marika, I guess it'd be the front side to you guys. Those loads are coming down here by accident, as far as I can tell, because there is no advantage to get to either work site by going down Eager Beswick and then trying to come in through the back way. That was a huge problem, if everybody remembers, towards the beginning of the project. And KRRC and QIT did a good job of getting maps out to everybody, trying them to reroute them. But just like everything else, right? You're not going to get 100% compliance. You're always going to get the couple drivers who think that they know better, and they'll come up through the back way and get stuck. So that issue, from my point of view, is relatively solved. It does not mean that it's done. I don't have any ideas on how to get better compliance for those few drivers that are missing. Hopefully with the stage that we are now in dam removal, we're going to see less equipment coming this way, even less, because a lot of it's going to be local work on site, right? Removing stuff and then moving it to the burial site. So the traffic getting stuck on this side of the project should be a thing of the past. And like I said, I agree, people are still driving way too fast, but sheriff's heard about it, CHP's here, they're heard about it. The easiest way to solve that problem is enforcement. Well, the easiest way is the guy holding the checkbook tells everybody to slow down. After that, the next easiest thing is enforcement.
Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Deaney from the board? Going once, twice, okay.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. We're going to item H. We are okay over there to my right. We're gonna kind of get through this. Community development.
Could I say something more on that?
Can't go there. I've been there already. Sorry. Otherwise, I open the door for everybody. Good afternoon. Well, yeah, it's good evening, Mr. Dean.
Good evening. Board of Supervisors, Rick Dean, Community Development Director. There you go. received a phone call from supervisors and also the CEO asking Environmental Health to do some sampling on the river as a means of checks and balances primarily. And there were some gaps that they were concerned that weren't being hit. So Environmental Health jumped on board and took action. Briefly, I'll talk about our sampling protocol for this. To be consistent, the samples are going to be taken, they have been taken, about a foot below the water column on the top, about 6 feet off of the shore, so we can have consistent results, consistent methodologies as we do these samples. First slide, and you all have a handout there, so you don't have to wrench your neck. It's basically a map from of the river, the sample locations. There were 6 location sites that were chosen. And I'll just kind of basically go through each of them. And Marie, if I can get the next slide, please. Okay, the first sample was taken at the Klamathon Wildlife Area, which is about 3/4 of a mile below the Klamathon Bridge. Next slide. So for each of our samples, basically the protocol is take the samples, label the samples, apply custody seals on them, and take a photograph of them in place. So you're just going to see this repeated for each of the sample locations. Next slide, please. Site 2, 2-SH, stands for Snag Hole. Those of you that are steelhead fishermen, you know where that snag hole's at. It's below the confluence of the Shasta River. Next slide. And samples that were taken in that location. Next slide, please. Site 3 is located below the confluence of Beaver Creek. One thing with the sampling that we wanted to achieve was to take samples above and samples below the McKinney Creek influence from the fire damage. So this site was chosen above Klamath River, below Beaver Creek. Next slide, please. And those are the samples. Happen to be a steelhead right there at the sample location. Not so much enjoying the new environment. Next slide. The fourth sample downriver is taken below the low lower bridge of the Horse Creek bridge there, duck turnout area. Next slide. And again, samples in place. Okay, next slide. Slide 5 is downriver of Syad, next slide. Samples, there they are, UPKIA. And the final and 6th is down at Happy Camp before you hit town there. There's a Happy Camp, so you just supposedly have a site there where they have all the portable toilets and whatnot. Down there, and next slide. Okay, there you have it. Now, these samples were taken on January 31st, and this first round is for heavy metal samples. The results are here with the board. I'll just briefly kind of go through them. I'm not going to go through them in detail. However, there are some things that I can point out. One thing I want to mention too, and this man brought up quite a bit today, is a reference to a drinking water standard. And I just want to say that a drinking water standard is not really the best metric. We're taking a look at, surface waters. Obviously, drinking water is more from a well or from a spring, some type of source that's not so subject to the environment, so to speak. That said, it is kind of basically the standard that everybody goes by, right? So at the back of the sampling page there, you'll see the EPA limits for drinking water and also for the California standards, just for reference. I'm in reference to the drinking standard, samples that we took, clearly aluminum, iron, arsenic, and lead were above the standard. Things I'd like to point out is basically below the Horse Creek sample. The exception of the aluminum and the iron, the remaining constituents all drop below the drinking water standard. So that's primarily due to dilution, obviously, I think, of that. But that's just an important thing to note. Further sampling, we have also taken other samples on the 6th. They're still at the lab. We'll be looking at all the other major constituents that were basically mimicking the sampling that was done at the reservoir in the previous studies. And it's a breath of 49 other analytes, dioxins, PVCs, the list goes on. Those results should be getting in to, from the lab on Friday. Spoke with Chelsea Murphy. We will be putting all of our lab results on the internet for all to see as soon as they come in. So, there's that. Before I move on to the next topic, just in recent conversation, listening in, I think obviously this river is 200 mile stretch of river. Primary jurisdiction is under the Fish and Wildlife, and really think it's very short-sighted that Fish and Wildlife has not taken on a comprehensive sampling effort for this, and I think it would be much better in the hands of them to do a complete sampling program to analyze this, right? This is the largest dam removal in the United States of America, and we need to learn things from this, right? I'm sure other dams are on the ticket in the future, so.
Are you talking federal, U.S., or Fish and Wildlife, state, or state, or
state,
both?
Yeah, state has a jurisdiction of the waterway, right? Well, California, and once you get on board, but the Klamath River ties into Crescent City, correct? Also, the state of California, all the way down the mouth. Any encouragement, I think, that we could apply to the state to do that comprehensive sampling, I would suggest.
Okay.
So that's the end of our sampling program. The other thing I was asked to speak about were the wells. And there's been quite a bit of conversation about the wells already. Here's a reference for everybody to see here off of Patricia Avenue. The well on the left-hand side is the community water system that we regulate with environmental health. It's a small state system. There were, I believe, 13 lots that were approved for that, 12 of which have been built on, and some of which are occupied now. That well during construction was 152 feet. At the time of construction, the static water level was 69 feet. We're in direct contact with the hydrogeologist, Jonathan Williams, who is monitoring these wells. And basically, they went to sound that. They got their gear hung up a couple times, but they were down to 135 and couldn't get the sound as well. So essentially, it's dry. As been mentioned, KRC has provided a water tank, 2,500 gallons, just tied into the system to temporarily serve the community homes there. The other well there that's mentioned is dry. We were able to probe that to the bottom, hit mud essentially, so it is completely dry. The three other sites that are being monitored. To date, anyway, there's only been like 1 foot of difference in elevation and static level. So it's currently they're holding ground. Associated with these, the monitors also have a couple wells that are being monitored on Mallard Cove and a few others that we're in direct contact with just for conversation wise. Next slide. Just for reference, this is coming out of the State Water Board's EIR conversation. We're looking at the wells. So there are cross sections that come right through those two areas. Next slide. Just generally speaking, with the analysis that was done, right, they broke it down into three different areas of well health, I guess if you want to call it. So essentially the wells that are drilled initially above the level of the lake, they're assumed to be healthy. Those that were drilled below the level of the bottom of the lake also are assumed to have a decent water supply. The wells that are targeted in the middle zone and were down to the reservoir level and below to down to the bottom of the reservoir are the wells that are in question. And in report 13 were cited, Mr. Branson spoke of 20, 22 that are at risk of going dry and most likely will over time. So I'll just end with that. And just encourage that Environmental Health is at the ready to do well permitting for long-term solutions as soon as possible. Close. Any questions?
Okay. Let me go to public here. Beatrice Leakins, is that right?
Beatrice Leakins, Klamath River. A lot of people from Kopko here. Not a whole lot of people from... Beatrice Leakins, Klamath River. Sorry.
It's okay.
Like I said, a lot of people from Kopko here, which makes sense. You know, it's quite a drive. So I'd like to speak for my neighbors, me and my neighbors. And it has to do with the well. So the question is actually very simple. So usually we do tests for the well water once every 2 years, pretty much. Now, with all these, you know, except for knowing we have a gigantic disaster, you know, we live on the river. Our well is right there, just like a lot of other people. This costs a lot of money. A normal well test costs, what, between $50 and $300. Now, with all the metals that we have to test for now, well, that goes up to about $800 maybe? $375 right now with Nielsen because it's a promotion. But that's going to cost us a lot of money. Instead of once every 2 years, we will have to test the water maybe, I don't know, just throwing it out there once a month, once every 2 months, who knows? So many unknown. Is that going to be refunded? Who's going to pay for this? This is a lot of money we're talking about, too, for just people on the river. Thank you.
Thank you. Chrissy Reynolds.
Kopko Lake. So in regards to the water sampling, thank you. I'm just curious as to why there's no sampling being done above us since the Dacey Boyle Dam was breached, and then, you know, immediately our water quality diminished, and so you're doing sampling below us, but you're not doing sampling above us for water quality. And, you know, we live here, it would be nice to know for our health and safety. Just in terms of some of the other things, I guess I'll have to talk to you privately since we're beyond those topics. We kind of kept moving along. And I appreciate everybody's extra time and attention to this. But, you know, just in terms of fire equipment that was given, I did go to the Fire Chiefs Association meeting. I don't want to just brag, but that was probably the most humiliating experience I'd ever been to. I've never been treated so disrespectfully. The president of the Fire Chiefs Association called me Little Bit. I've heard enough from you, Little Bit. I've heard what you had to say. After making me stay through the entire meeting before I could just make a presentation. And I just want to say that it just seems like this is why there's a lack of public trust on our behalf, because I think all of the things that we've been asking for are reasonable, normal things, and our department certainly got overlooked. I'm glad that they're getting something now, but it's just par for the course. You're doing sampling below us. Other departments are getting apparatus. We're the first ones impacted, and yet we're the last ones to be considered. And this is why, in terms of the well monitoring, people weren't wanting to have people on their property to monitor their wells because there was no public trust. And the fact that the mitigation was that $5,000, and if you didn't agree to that, you couldn't go back for more. So there were conditions in place which caused lack of public trust for these issues.
Thank you. Crystal Maxwell. Some wells and the sampling that we're doing.
Real quick about the county roads you were talking about. The county said that they were going to make a sign so that the big rigs would not be coming up here, and that has never been done. Okay, now talking about well monitoring. Someone had made the comment about more people needed to do, that they were disappointed that we didn't do the well monitoring. Well, let's get a little bit of facts. We called, and the place that was provided to us was back ordered 6 months. So, and they gave us a deadline that we had to have that in place. If it's back ordered 6 months, we can't do that. We found another place that would do it, $3,000, and they did not monitor it. Then, when the whole statement was made that if your well went dry, they would give you $5,000, so we started doing a little research on our own. We called 12 different places that deal with wells, and no one in Oregon can come help us because they don't have California permits. There's only one guy anywhere near in Hornbrook that does a well, and he's got over a year waiting list, and he's older, and he wants to retire. So then the closest was Redding. $50,000 just to get the equipment up here. $75,000 to drill deeper. And he said, if you don't get water, then we got to start another drill. So just to get the equipment up here and to see if they can get water in your existing well is $125,000. So $5,000 is a joke. It does nothing. And then if you have to do another one, then you're looking at another $125,000. So your well may be more than your property's worth now, because your property is losing value. So that whole thing, the $5,000 is a joke. I mean, they literally laughed at us when we told them that that's what they were gonna give us, was $5,000. But because of, like I said, because of the permits, the closest we could find that actually could do it is Redding. And someone had mentioned that they had talked to people to see if we had issues about, you know, anything, issues about our houses or planting things around our property. I would like to know who they talked to, because we've never been talked to. And we're on Patricia. So we're on the more dangerous area. Never heard from anyone. And that is it on that.
Thank you. William Simpson.
I just want to thank the chairman and the board for staying so late to hear all these things, because, you know, I know you guys have heard this a million times already, and it's nice that the public here, the constituents, can actually come together and do this. So what I'd like to, first of all, I did have a couple questions about the values of the aluminum, iron, and arsenic, and lead that the county tested, what those values were. That was question one. Also, you know, I mean, we're not trying to pull a fast one here. Nielsen did this test that I have here, and it wasn't cheap, and I didn't touch the water sample. An independent couple did it down there, and the man who actually took the water sample worked for Pacific Corp for 20 years. He knows what he's doing. He's done all kinds of stuff up there. So, and we're seeing values, and we're not seeing things tested. Again, there's been no sediment testing. It seems like all that science that was done 20 years ago that Dr. Paul Hauser got fired for coming out with the truth, those reports have just kind of disappeared. So we need to do sediment testing on what's remaining in these lake bottoms. That's not job one. Job two, we need to start looking at the things that the county hasn't tested. I know you said you're going to start testing, but besides the aluminum, iron, arsenic, and lead, we need to look at barium because we have a huge spike in that, cadmium, and chromium. And these things are probably some of the most egregious things you could get in your water. And then the sediment's critical because it's going to be dust. I mean, they talk about it's also wonderful they're going to fly over with helicopters and sprinkle fairy dust and seeds everywhere. But the thing is this. Anybody in this room that's a farmer knows you got to drill seed in the good soil to get good response. This is microcrystalline clay. It's got low pH. It's loaded with anthropogenic nitrogen and phosphates. It just will burn the roots off anything. The only thing I think that could take root out there, maybe, is yellow star thistle. So, and that's, I mean, I'm being straight up here. So it all listens good. They've got a really wonderful narrative. But the thing is they're going to leave. They're going to collect all their money, and they're going to go, well, you know, and it's going to be more of this deception and switching the spin and so on and so forth. They got a great spin job going on here. But we've got to see past it because we all got to live here. When they leave, we're here. We're stuck with it. And the Board of Supervisors may be dealing with some very long-term serious issues like cancer clusters and things like that. And I would strongly encourage this board to declare, as Ray Help mentioned, maybe declare an advisory or an emergency that, you know, we don't know what's happening with this water. We do have a report that's a red flag, and hey, all the way down the river, people need to start, like this one resident was saying, they got to test their wells now. This stuff moves through the alluvium. And it's deadly. So, and that's why the fish are dead. And then the other thing I was going to say is I want to thank the road department, Tom, that they've been trying to do a good job up on Copco. I mean, those guys are flying down the hill, and I live off Copco Road, and I can tell you right now, those big semis are going down there, 45, 50. And, of course, we had that fatality. Those kids got orphaned, and the rumor, I don't have this on verified authority, but the rumor is the guy that was coming down was a security guy working for the dam removal. And he was killed in his Dodge pickup after he went over the center line and hit those people. And I know the toxicology report is not showing up on this guy. So there seems to be maybe some throttling back of reporting on that because it would be three deaths attributed to the dam removal. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on here, Chairman and Supervisors. I would like to see the board a little bit more proactive, if you could. I know you guys are jammed, but this is a big deal. This is, I mean, the River of Death, I don't think that's an overstatement. Go down there. Pick up some of that black clay and look at it. Smell it. It's terrible stuff.
Thank you. Richard Marshall.
Okay, I'm going to talk about mitigation.
You want to, okay, I'll take you off this one. All right. You want to answer some of those questions that came up?
Yes, please. Clarification, we did sample for chromium and cadmium both. Neither of them are over the drinking water standard. Barium, we did not. That was not part of the suit. Other thing I want to mention, though, too, response to the bill. So, I was down there personally on the 28th, and the area below Klamathon was running black. It really was. And that's the day that you guys took your samples. 3 days later, when we took our samples, it was chocolate, basically. So it was lessened in nature, so to speak. So I would expect your samples to be higher than what
Any questions from the board? Supervisor Howe?
Just a statement, I guess. Every first-year hydrology student is told the answer to pollution is more dilution. And you're going to see pulses. So your sample is one thing. Your sample is one thing. We're going to see these pulses, I guess, you know, cyclic with whatever's going on with weather or the construction activity here. I'm really curious to see what this is going to look like in the summer when we have a lot less dilution but the same amount of pollution going down the river. With that said, I wanted to ask Michael Harrison. I don't know if you've seen anything. I'm looking for any studies that have ever been done on the river or any disclosure, because I don't remember anything in any of the analysis that talked about the destruction of the food web in the river. And I don't know how these fish are going to get from the hatchery to the mouth if there's nothing for them to eat the entire way when they're released. And that's what's going on in the main stem of the river. And I don't know. If there's some of those studies, I'd sure like to read them. But in 25 years, I've never seen one. Thanks.
Any other board member?
Just one real quick. Sure. Maybe I missed it, Rick, but we're going to do like maybe monthly testing or something throughout this project. I think we need to do that for our own account.
That time frame has not been established. Just understand it's very expensive to do.
Maybe we bring it up for discussion what the cost is, but I do think when the Inquisition comes, it won't be that we didn't do our part.
Right. We need to have a record.
And with regard to what Ms. Reynolds brought up about sampling, I understand why we sampled below the dam removal, but it might be good to look at this spot up in here as well. Thank you, Mr. Dean. All right, we'll move on to item.
Can we just take a couple minutes?
Sure, we'll take 2 minutes.
Shorten my.